The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We're going to have John Bloom on today's show. John, of course, the first-year play-by-play voice of the Phoenix Suns. Not that you're not familiar with John through the years. He's a post-game host, filled in for Al at times, the great Al McCoy. I just want to chop it up with John about his journey as we sit here getting ready for game number three tomorrow night. And his backstory is pretty interesting. I'll just leave it at that. John Bloom will be with us. That comes up in about 15 minutes. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. I was with Carlisa from Desert Financial yesterday working on a documentary that I wanted to bring her up to speed on. That is, it's a hard story, but as partners, I like to keep everybody abreast and see if there's ways that they can be involved with their random acts of kindness. Terrific stuff. It is NFL draft day. It is Grayson Allen injured. How severe day. It is Always Something University with Always Something going on. It is the Diamondbacks cannot seem to find a way to keep a pitcher healthy. Like, my gosh, the number of elbow and shoulders that are going on with that team. So there's a lot going on. I have a new addition to the set. If you notice, the pointer. There it is. The yellow southern other way. You know what? That's much better. You're probably laughing right now. I'm just vertically challenged with this. It's the yellow banner over there underneath my buddy Pat. This, if you're wondering, this best friend in life that passed away unexpectedly. I still get moved in emotions by him. This is last night. This is the mini dunes that I went to last night at Southern Dunes. They gave us a flag. So Southern Dunes, I love going out there. I get away from this. People say, oh my gosh, you play so much golf. I see you on social media, play so much golf. Well, yeah, when you're up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning and you're doing this, or you're putting a team together, or you want to go here, you want to throw darts in the ceiling or throw pencils in the ceiling, or you're just thinking about what would be cool to build. You worry about your people. You manage to take care of yourself and your family, all that stuff. So yes, I golf. Guilty. I'm not good. I really enjoy it. So we've been out at Southern Dunes a lot. They opened it. It's under the lights. And it doesn't matter if you're a hacker. You could swing and miss 100 times. Doesn't matter. It was a great event last night. I got to chop it up. Eddie Johnson was out there. Seth Joyner was out there. Dan Marley was out there. Jay Feely was out there. Our buddies over at Harrah's, our partners at Harrah's were out there. Brady Wilson from Southern Dunes, he was crying on the stage. It was, saw Jim Sharp from KTAR. We used to work together during mornings over there years and years ago. So it was just fun. It was fun and it was relaxing. It was great. And then I'm driving back and it's like, okay, get your mind ready for tomorrow. Because I knew today was going to be a heavy, big lifting day of things. And I want to start on the draft stuff. Like, everybody's excited. Mock drafts are out of the way. Just so I can date myself properly, back in the day with drafts, we used to hold draft get-togethers. And I'm going to go to one tonight over at Trophy for a bit because I want to gauge the temperature. Your Cardinals have two picks in the first round. And I think what they did last year was really smart. We'll see if they do it again this year. And I could make the argument, just draft Marvin Harrison and call it a day. But that to say, back in the day, there used to be, and it was primarily male-driven. This was in the 80s and 90s before I came over here. We would host draft get-togethers at San Diego Stadium. Chargers were a big deal. We would have fans. We would invite out the draft Knicks, I call them. Draft Knicks would have something like this. And they would have a sheet of paper like this. And it would be of all ages. I loved having the 75, 80-year-old draft Nick that would show up. The draft Nick just felt it appropriate to lay out the entire first round and second round. And the Chargers were very, very accommodating and very nice to deal with. And I respected them. And it's a lot different over here, obviously, if you've watched this through the years. And doesn't mean there's not some good people over there. So draft Knicks would would be all enamored that we would have Mel Kiper come on, because in the day, Mel would just come on and do anything with anybody and take anything. This was before restriction. That really started in the late 90s. You may be coming into this part of your life, 18 to 34-year-old male, 35 to 54 male, if I'm talking demos and business of sports, which I like doing. And what it's turned into more than ever, I think, with fandom, fandom now having all sorts of different outlets, is it's just, it doesn't matter to you who they take. It's going to be a great pick. I've joked through the years, whenever there's a draft, if there is ever a president or a GM that steps up to a microphone and says, man, did we get screwed? Or did we draft a turd? Never happens, ever. Now, there's times where you find people behind the scenes, drafts are done, assistant general manager, or I dealt with a tremendous general manager in Bobby Bethard through the years, and his staff, Billy Devaney, Marty Herney, Marty's still bumping around the league, really smart, good football guys. And they would tell you flat out, you know, this is the strengths, this is the weaknesses, and there would be the trust that I'm not going to go on the air and say, well, okay, this happened, that happened. And this goes back to the late Junior Seau. I can go back that far on some things. So draft for me, just to see it, I know that no matter what the Cardinals do tonight, it will be tremendous. It will be the best thing ever. The Super Cardinals are back and all of that. And of course, in my space, I will take that approach if I believe it to be true. I am never going to sit here and just placate the fan base and say, oh, this pick is great, and even though inside it's, this pick sucks. You know, and I appreciate it when I come across the people that just put fandom to the side. That's part of it. But can just objectively look at something and say, okay, so why? Because tonight, if Monty trades back and out of Marvin Harrison Jr., there'll be debate forever about if the Cardinals did the right thing. And yet I'm on the side of the fence of if he trades back, I'm 100% supporting him. This is one of those that's very rare because it feels like there's going to be quarterback. Okay, then there's the best player at a different position available. Thus, I get the best player at a different position. Thus, I'm taking that player. Okay, I can defend that all day long. I'm not going to rip it. If he says, I'm trading out of four, then I have to trust that as good as Monty Austenfort was last year, and I thought it was pretty damn good, that if he says, I'm trading out of four because I think if I trade down to here or there, this is a draft that could set the Cardinals up for a long run of success. And Marvin Harrison Jr. just taking him at four, yeah, you're plugging a huge hole. He's just a torn ACL away from your, like, okay, we lost our first round pick for the year. What else did we get? Versus, okay, we traded back and we ended up with three extra picks, two of them this year and one next year. We still got a player of position. It might be the second best player. It might be the first defensive tackle. I don't know. But I feel like the intrigue around this draft for me is to the point where I've usually just sat here in my office and had people out. I'm going to the Cardinals tonight. I'm going to go. I'm going to sit there and take it all in. I do believe that there is something interesting and intriguing. I will stop by Trophy Bar along the way to get a temperature from the fans, or run over there after the first pick if they keep it at four and just run down the street. It's not that far away. And so the draft to me is very interesting. Obviously, the death of the Pac-12, it's going to hurt to see. They're going to talk about Bo Nix, and they're going to talk about Penix, and they're going to talk about Caleb, and they're all three of those guys are going to go tonight. And, you know, Jaden Daniels and his time here at Arizona State, that's going to hurt some Sun Devil fans. And all I can say on that is that era you wish would be closed. You wish that tonight would be the final straw. It's not, because they haven't 100% shut the case entirely on ASU. The outrage, I'm going to get over it all with something, university, because I'm more interested in the Suns. I'm quite frankly fatigued with ASU. Because they are always something university. And I'm fatigued with the constant, we've got it all figured out, and just the sheer lunacy of what's gone on over there with Michael Crow. And finally, finally, there's some people that are saying, wait a second. Wait a second. You know, if Chris Howard's going to be the guy to replace Michael Crow, I know there's some people that want Doug Ducey to replace Michael Crow. Michael Crow hasn't gone anywhere yet. And I pretty much am of the opinion that Michael Crow is always going to say, read between the lines. This is who I am, and this is how it's going to go, and this is how it's been through the years. It doesn't matter how many football coaches give me stories of things that have happened through the years over there. He's just always going to be, and then there's going to be the defenders because they're the points and paycheck people. You know, we talked about Rashada going to Georgia a couple days ago. That's where he was going to go. I think Elijah Badger is going to end up at Alabama. Could be wrong. Anytime you're like, let me forecast what's going to happen with NIL, all it takes is one crazy bat bleep crazy booster to say, you know what, let's throw an extra zero on there. What was the story? I'm all over the place, which is fine. I like being all over the place. The story when Robert Sarver, the Suns had a certain amount of money to work with and for free agency. And so they sit down, and I've had this story relayed many times, and they sit down and they get, they think they've got the number figured out, and it was Josh Childress. And it was another player, but Josh was, they ended up, Roberts is like, well, you know, let's just throw another, put another zero on the end of it. And just, and the people were like, oh my gosh, of his staff. Just takes one crazy owner, just takes one crazy booster. It takes one booster to say, I'm staying at the urinal and I'm bigger than you, so let me just show you that by I'm a big cigar, and that's all it takes. So I'm not going to forecast, sounds like. And you know, look, Rashada at Georgia, Rashada's already on his third school. This whole nother show, but this is killing college football. I've heard that one. I've heard that one here. This is killing college athletics. I don't care anymore. No, I talked with Wilner about this a little bit of the other day, but I'm hearing it more than ever. It doesn't matter who they sign. Like, I've even got to look at it on our platforms. Jordy does a great job. Jordan Hamm, he does a great job. Better than anybody in getting the breakdown and going in depth. Better than anybody of what the backstory is and who comes on board. And he handles himself so professionally and so humble. And when he does that, now we're in a space of, okay, we're just going to get some clicks for about 6 or 8 months because then that kid's going to leave. That's where we are at Always Something University. This is a swipe at Kenny. Kenny's in a sword fight with a piece of spaghetti. With one arm tied behind his leg, he's the Black Knight and Monty Python, the Holy Grail. That's who he is. I'm not being negative on him. It's just a fact. So do we go do these deep dives on these players just to get you all excited, and then they're going to leave a year from now? Basically where we are today. Understand this. When this gets misrepresented or misquoted or anything, where we are today is ASU Athletics is AAA. Today. Okay, don't misrepresent. Don't just take a little slice out to appease your little tiny audience. Today, they are AAA, meaning they're going to develop talent, and that talent's going to go up a class and be thrown a lot of money, and it all trickles down to the incompetence of the president with athletics. Never have questioned Michael Crow with his acumen on the academic side. Anybody who defends him on the athletic side, you're just a points and paycheck person, and I really am not going to listen to you because there's no reason to defend it. Now to more happy topics. Grayson Allen's injured ankle. I say happy. I don't know what's going to happen there, and it is a loss. It's a loss. We'll talk to John Bloom about it here momentarily. The Suns have a workout today. Nothing has really happened. I was talking to EJ last night at the golf thing, Eddie Johnson. And we're of the opinion, is I asked him, like, what do you think? He's like, well, if you're asking me, you don't believe that the Suns are going to come back. No. Just stop. Here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a team that's younger, that's got some size issues for the Suns to deal with. And EJ, of course, is of the opinion that that they're going to get this figured out and get it taken care of. So today is going to be interesting to hear what Frank Vogel has to say about Grayson Allen. You have to find somebody to step into that place. Royce O'Neal? I don't know. I'm tending to look at Josh Okogie, and I'm looking at other players on the bench saying they haven't done anything yet. And it takes that one guy. I've seen it through the years in playoffs. It takes one guy. Comes off the bench. He gives him a bit of a spark. 12 points, 5 rebounds, couple of assists, couple steals. Just one energy guy. It doesn't always have to be the big three. The big three have got to play better. When Devin Booker gets ripped and crushed and criticized like he is right now, he usually responds, usually. And then the Diamondbacks. So I got to use my notes here because the list is so long. Okay, so we were talking about Merrill Kelly's out a month. Seawald, that's an oblique, that's different. He's close to being back. Ryan Nelson, Castro, Merrill Kelly. Merrill Kelly's a big one. He's out a month. But they all have shoulder stuff. Somebody was telling me that spring training's not long enough, or they weren't used enough, or whatever it might be. But you have to wonder what is going on. And it's not just in Arizona, but I'm here. So I'm going to focus on Arizona. I'm going to do this. Is there something that was going on in spring training? There just wasn't enough work or overwork, or you can't have this many guys. And all of a sudden, say, well, it's just a fluke. That's a lot. And Jordan Montgomery was really good yesterday. I enjoyed watching him pitch. He was. He didn't get enough help. But, you know, for 1 year, $25 million, get him out there, convince him to stay. I liked him. Liked him a lot, obviously. He looked great yesterday against St. Louis. He just didn't have help. All right, John Bloom is next. Stay with us. All right, it is time to chop it up for the very first time with John Bloom. The voice of the Suns on the radio side, he is in his first season as the man. He is in his first playoffs in taking this all in courtside. And I just felt like leaving you alone this year. So don't take offense that I haven't asked you to come on. It's just like it's your first year. Has it been a big transition for you? We'll get into playoffs and why they're 0-2 and all that stuff in a minute. I just want to know about you. How are you handling all this?
You know what? I'm doing well, Brad, and I am. I'm not going to take it personal that you didn't invite me until now. I'm just going to be thrilled that you invited me now, that we get to hang out and chop it up, as you say. I miss seeing you around. I think it's just a combination of factors. A lot of times when you do come to games, I'm already up in the perch and I miss you. This is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to talking about whatever you want to talk about, my man. I'm not going to skirt any issues. You know this.
I know, look,
it's been a tough start to the playoffs. There's no question. As we sit here talking down 0-2 to the Timberwolves in the first round, I didn't expect that. And I know a lot of people didn't expect that. And I know everything that we base kind of our feelings about this basketball team is on those expectations. And so I know we'll get to all that, won't we?
I'm sure we will at some point. It's not brain surgery on my part. I mean, sometimes it is, I guess, if you want to go down that path. I'm just wondering about you. You found yourself at any point in time this season saying, you got to just pinch me right now. This is bleeping not happening. And you've just taken it all in. You sound great. You haven't sounded like somebody who hasn't done this before. And people may not know your backstory of play-by-play. So I do want to get into that. But just this season and how it went.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were definitely moments, Brad, where I was like, okay, you know, I'm here. This is finally an opportunity that I've waited a long, long time to get, not just for the Phoenix Suns, but just to be a voice of a team is something I've always wanted to do. I've done it, you know, on a few different levels, whether it was, you know, calling Oakland University basketball back in the day when I was in the Detroit area, or Wayne State football, or then when I got to Phoenix, getting an opportunity to do some Arizona Cardinals play-by-play during the preseason when Dave Pasch would slide over to TV, or doing high school stuff with K-Ray when I first got going, and Dan Minucci. I remember calling a few games with him, 20 years ago almost when I first moved here to the Valley, and then doing some G League games, but nothing is close to calling NBA action. I mean, it's just it's at a completely different level, especially for calling a team that I've considered my team since I was 13 years old. So, yeah, there's been moments. I mean, I think back to just, you know, significant moments basketball wise. And the one that just jumps in my head is Madison Square Garden and Devin Booker hitting the game winner at the, you know, basically near the buzzer, you know, at that place was just phenomenal. I was able to use a line, which I had kind of in my back pocket since college when I used to call the Big East tournament. I went to the Madison Square Garden for the first time as a Syracuse student. And I was thinking to myself, man, this is unbelievable. This is all the stories I've heard about. And of course, every time you go to New York, and I was in school in technically New York State, right, in Syracuse, but far away from New York City. Of course, the anthem is Frank Sinatra and New York, New York. So I had this line in the back pocket, and Booker hits that shot, and I was able to deliver it. And it was just, if he could make it there, he could make it anywhere. And it came from that song. It was something I thought maybe I could use way back in the day with Syracuse in the Big East tournament, but I never had the chance. Booker gave me that chance. I'm always going to remember stuff like that. The other memory I want to share with you, which I haven't told anybody yet, is last week we were in Sacramento, and that is not the birthplace or, you know, that kind of significance of my parents, but they both ended up there from the Midwest. Mm. Okay, so both my sets of grandparents settled in Sacramento, California. One set, my dad's parents are buried there. They're actually, you know, interned and I went and visited the site, and I've never done that. I've never gone and visited other than being at funerals and burials and those types of, you know, services. But I felt like, you know what? I want to go tell my grandparents I'm here calling a game. I know they're not there in my head. I know they're not in that box, but I just had the conversation. I was all by myself. It was a really surreal moment. This was just a week ago or so. It still really hit me just talking about it with you, Brad, because I haven't shared it with that many people. But it was meaningful to me. It was something I'll remember. You know, even though I don't really think a lot about Sacramento as being a big part of my history, I spent a ton of time as a kid there because I would get shuttled there in the backseat in the middle because I'm the youngest between my brother and sister. At the five of us going the 2.5 hours or whatever it was from the Bay Area to Sacramento to visit the grandparents and the aunts and the uncles and cousins and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's all buried, you know, in my mind. And this was kind of a way for me to pay my respects. That's the best way to say it.
No, I mean, none of us get out of here alive last time I checked. So if you're going to go visit, and I think as we age, not to get too deep, although I don't mind it, you have those moments where you just kind of tilt your head and say, you know, I'm going to talk to somebody today that I really respect who's doing his thing. There's days where I'll sit across from this and it's just people I really like to visit with. I'm just blessed to be on the right side of the grass for another day, as I'm sure you feel the same way. And so back to the job itself. So you're in Madison Square Garden. You referred to Syracuse many times. What is the deal with Syracuse? Like, you know, I take Syracuse from days when Bob Costas used to come on with me. And I still use Bob occasionally. He's gracious and great coming on. Of course, Dave Pasch. And what is in the water at Syracuse for sports broadcasters, John?
Well, I'll just tell you from my own personal experience, right, because that's all I can really, you know, account for here, is growing up in the Bay Area when I was growing up. So I'm talking when I first kind of started to look into this, it was late 80s. It was right around the time when I became a Suns fan in 88, when KJ got traded here as a rookie. So all of that was when kind of I was coming to form, I guess you could say, as my origin story, if you will. And so when I was doing that work and figuring out, okay, if I can't be an athlete because I know I don't have what it takes, all right, I'm clearly not cut out to be a professional athlete. Nobody in my family is. And nobody in my family was really into sports except for my dad. It would come back from his long business trips, and that would be the time I would have the bond with him. He basically put me on his lap, and there'd be a game on. And so I took to that and maximized those moments as much as possible from a little kid all the way to then we get to like 13 when I'm starting to do the research. And I realized, wait, why is Syracuse called Sportscaster U? Like, why is that a nickname for this school way out central New York, across the country from where I was growing up, which I knew nothing about other than Bob Costas, Marv Albert, Dick Stockton, Mike Tirico, Sean McDonough, on and on and on. All these people I'm watching on TV now, still Syracuse guys. And this was back then. So I'm thinking, all right, if I'm going to do this, that's probably my best bet. This is how my brain worked. Do whatever you can to get into that school and go follow whatever they did to try to make this a career. And so, you know, it wasn't necessarily a layup because I had to get the grades to get in, obviously. Sure. I had to have my parents be able to have enough funds to help me pay my way. Now I had to get some help and get some academic scholarship because of the work I put in high school. But, you know, it was still, it wasn't the money it is now, Brad. Oh my gosh, I got a senior in high school getting ready to go to CU Boulder. And thank goodness my wife and I have been putting away since she was born. But, you know, that has changed dramatically. But I am so thankful for my parents to be able to allow me to chase this dream. And that's what I did. I went all the way across the country to chase that dream. Now, as far as what is it about Syracuse, in my opinion, it's not the school necessarily, although Newhouse was fantastic. I've now taught at Cronkite. You remember when we were grounded for a year with COVID and we didn't travel for the Suns, I got to teach a live play-by-play broadcasting class at Cronkite, and that was a true thrill. I can't do it anymore because travel doesn't allow me to be here enough, but for one semester, it was great. I had a great group of kids. They're now pros, several of them, and it's really exciting to follow their careers. But what I'm talking about is I think the resources at Cronkite here at ASU are right on par with Newhouse at Syracuse. What I think made the difference and why there have been so many great broadcasters that have come from there, and I'm not even including myself in that group, is the competition. You get there, you look around, and everybody wants to do the same thing you do. So guess what? Who's going to rise to the top? The cream, the best of the best, and the people that can handle that competition, which is what's going to get you ready for the real world, isn't it? You felt that. I know you have, Brad. And I know I have as well in my 25 plus years in this business. It's a cutthroat business. There's no doubt. So how do you get ready for something like that? Syracuse was a great environment for that. It was the radio station specifically for me, WAER 88.3 FM, jazz station during the day. The only thing that was student run is the sports station. There were also students helping with DJing and news broadcasting, but the student sports station, this thing was a well-oiled machine from the top to the bottom. Dave Pasch was the sports director when I was a freshman when I first got there. And I get into this room in this auditorium, and they basically are laying it out for us. There's a couple hundred of you in here. We have 15 spots for writers. And what a writer is at the radio station is you show up at 4 o'clock in the morning. You write a 3-minute sports cast. Doesn't go on the air. You put it on a cassette tape back then. Now I'm sure it's all digital. And then you take it to office hours where a junior who's a personnel director at the radio station, a junior in college, rips you to shreds. And this is a process that happens for 6 months to a year if you're lucky and you stay with it, and then you get cleared to be on the air. And rarely does a freshman ever get on the air at WAER in Syracuse. Now, I hustled. I took it upon myself as a challenge. And I just, you know, went at it every second of the way. I put my Walkman on my ears every time I walked through the snow. Because consider, you're getting up at 3:30. They haven't plowed the roads yet. I'm from Northern California, outside the Bay Area. It didn't snow growing up. I didn't know this stuff. I just put blues music on. I put my guy, B.B. King or Bobby Blue Bland, in my ears. I trudged through the snow. I got down there. I wrote the best 3-minute sports cast I could think of. I got my ass reamed by the personnel director. I handled it. I'm sure I had plenty of anxieties that I worked my way through my freshman year, as I know my kids are going to battle as well. But you know, it was the best thing for me. And yep, it just taught me what it was like to be a pro before I was anywhere close to being a pro, if that makes any sense.
No, sure, sure. Where were you when you got the letter of acceptance? Because I'm sure this was before email that you got the letter. Did you go to the mailbox, or was it an email that you've been admitted?
Mailbox. Definitely. Mailbox. Remember it.
So
yeah.
You walk out there. What happened?
I remember the envelope. It was kind of like a off-white, you know, and why does it seem like it's fancier when it's just not plain white, the envelope, right? And it had a little thick material to it with the block orange S in the corner. And I was like, oh, here we go. Rip that thing open, and right away I didn't wait. So I know some people like take it in. Now you have to produce a video with like lights and everything else.
Yeah.
You know,
less honored and amazed. Got it.
Thank goodness that was not the case back then. But I do remember the day. I remember being absolutely elated, and you know, sharing it with my parents and family first, and friends, and you know, my friends. that I grew up with, and they helped raise me. There's no question about it. I have this like core group of dudes that I'm still super tight with, and I feel so lucky to have them. But I was the freak. Like, I was the one person that knew exactly what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, all that stuff. So I just imagine, like, what happened if that letter was a rejection? Like, how the rest of my road would have gone, you know? But I'm so thankful it wasn't.
John Bloom is with us for a few minutes, just chopping it up. When was the moment you realized you could be a pro basketball announcer? Because people may not know that you did the G League and that experience. And, you know, when I talk to someone like Joe Pashley, who the audience doesn't know, but you know, and you're nodding your head, and he said, John, from day one, had such excitement and enthusiasm and was so good, and you can just tell. He was effusive in praise for you. I don't know why, but he knew he was, John. And but you know, like, when was the moment where it was, you know what, I can actually do this at a professional level?
Ooh, I think I'll probably go back to Syracuse, and I'll go back to some moments where, you know, it was hard and where I would fail. Yeah. I know that might sound weird, you know, like you asked this question, when did you figure it out? And a lot of people would probably be like, it had to be like when you had a killer, you know, buzzer beater call, and you knew you could do that. Anybody could do that, right, Brad? Anybody can say shot and a score or whatever it happens to be. But it's when you fail, when maybe something you thought was great wasn't, but you were able to realize that, you were able to move on and you were able to get better because of it. And I think there were a couple moments during that. Now, this is a time I'm also thankful I got to be there when technology hadn't fully evolved. So I got to be there from reel to reel days, slicing the oh my gosh, we're slicing reels. Yep. And we're using this tiny bit of tape, and we're using these chalk things, and we're doing all this stuff that nobody out there probably has a clue that this is how you heard audio when you tuned into the radio. It was done that way. And then the big carts that were these massive, you know, giant carts that you put in, and that was how you heard a commercial. So I'm so glad I got to do all that stuff before we went to, you know, cassette tapes, CDs, and then of course digital editing, which is now a breeze for most people who are in that business. So whole different world, and I love that part of technology. Some technology I don't love, that part, that's great. To be able to edit audio and video the way we can now, and produce things for people, produce content the way you're doing it right now, it's just, all this stuff is great, and it gets me going too. But from a standpoint of the failures, some of that was involved in learning these technologies. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of why I'm excited. And I always go back to my kids, because you could tell how intertwined I am with them. I'm really into being a dad too. And I'm trying to help prepare them, because I know it's going to be a drastic change when they leave my hood and they go to their own. So I think, you know, one of those things is fail. Just be ready. You're going to fail. But it's about how you handle that. And we can take this to the basketball court, can't we? How do you handle it when you're in times of turmoil? And that's going to show you whether you can be that pro. And for me, that's what it was. It was staying over in the summer times and learning how to do all the different parts of the radio station. It was doing the DJing at night. It was getting up in the middle of the morning to do the sports, you know, cast. And it was all of that that showed me, if I'm this dedicated and I'm still loving all of this, yeah, I can take this all the way. I can make this a living.
No, I 1 year I was a play-by-play voice of San Diego State basketball. For many years I was, and they weren't good at all. And we had a game in Beaumont, Texas, 2 days before Christmas, and the starting point guard and the backup point guard didn't make the trip because of legal situations that happened on campus with Twinkies and shoplifting, of all things. And we get down there, and it's just me. I'm my own engineer. You've probably been in the same place. And it's 5 o'clock. It's drive time. We're a huge signal. So we're on in all Southern California, downtown LA to downtown San Diego. And they turn the ball over 46 times. And they lose by 40. And then we get in the bus, and we go back to the hotel, and the power is out. 2 days before Christmas. And they had candles lit and for us to eat. And I just made a mention to somebody, I feel like we're at the Last Supper. And I tell that story, and really, that stuff happens? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember Al having trash cans next to him when he's had to puke, you know, and you're doing things. And I've never heard you go into it's the referee's fault. We're in this space tonight. It doesn't mean you're not critical, but you handle your business in a way, John, that I think is exemplary, because there are nights when you're not your best. there are nights where you probably want to be with your kids and not somewhere else. And this isn't a slight at the job, but you have to find that balance. And it sounds like you've found it already, which I believe is one of the hardest things of doing this is life balance.
It is. And, you know, not just life balance, but also kind of emotional balance. Right. So I think one of the challenges for me, Brad, and I've already thrown this out, you knew this about me, was being a Suns fan for as long as I have been. And then taking those phone calls after games for 15 years, which was in essence my therapy. Right. Of how I dealt with how the team was doing. And during a good portion of those years, I needed that, and we all did. And so we all had each other, and it was it really felt like the right place for me to be, even though the place I always wanted to be was behind the headset calling the action, and I'm so thankful to be there. But I think one of the challenges for me was to, you know, make sure that I don't ride that wave too much, or that roller coaster, if you will, and then I try to stay a little bit more balanced with my own emotions. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with everything: wins and losses, bad calls and good calls, you know, great plays and bad plays, all these different things, because I tend to run hot. I have a temper on the golf course, really, mostly is where it comes out. It doesn't come out much in public, but on the golf course it does. I've got, you know, obviously a sense of humor, and I've got passion, and I've got a lot of these waves that I ride, just like all of us do as humans. But what I'm trying to hone in on as the voice of the Phoenix Suns is to just not let myself get too much of that, you know, sure. Because I know that that can rub off, and I know that that maybe cannot be a great thing to listen to either. So, I mean, my main thing is I've always known that, you know, there's no perfection to this. It's an art form. I look at it as an art form, and I'm going to continue to work at it. And I am really enjoying the opportunity. And I think that I know for a fact that I can get a lot better. And I can't wait to continue to kind of evolve my own style and game, if you will.
When you have that team that's going through transition and they win 12 games or 18 games, that's when you know, I think. When you have a bad team and you've got to show up and you know they're going to be bad. Like I did baseball. Jerry asked me to do some Diamondback games for a year. And it was great, but I can't imagine doing 162 nights and knowing in spring training, this team's not going to win 40 games. And every day you're going to go to the ballpark, or in the Suns' case, back in the decade of decline, as I like to call it, or don't like to call it, but that's what it was, where they're going to get their heads kicked in again tonight. And it's just, what are we doing here? So I want to take that and transition over to this. They haven't gotten their heads kicked in two games. This is how NBA playoffs works from my view. And feel free to jump in and just blow me out of the water. It's as simple as Devin's going to be pissed for game three. Because whenever Devin Booker gets ripped and crushed and criticized, which is all that is happening right now, okay? What I've seen out of him through the years is that's usually where he walks in and says, okay, enough of all of you. And they're back home. So take it from there on being down 0-2 in my views.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right basically on the parallel like mindset with you. I think I'm not putting it just on Book, although obviously this is his team. And so we're going to start there. And I'm with you that I have high expectations for his performance in game three. Does that mean he's going to have 60? No. But I do believe that he will show the qualities that we all expect him to show to help this team put out a better performance than they have in the first two games. And I think that should hopefully put him in position to win game three, which obviously is a must win. You don't get down 3-0 and win in the NBA. It's clear. The numbers prove it. So they got to win. We know what that means. They've got to play better, obviously, to put it simplest. So if we're going to start with Book, that's fine. I'm good with you there. But to me, it's going to be everybody communicating when they're good. What's happening with this team? They are communicating. They are moving. They are moving the ball, and they're playing basketball in a form, in a way that makes us all happy to watch and happy to be there. And for me, thrilled to be able to call. So I think that they've got to get that going. It's easier said than done. No question. And as you mentioned, it starts with Book. But I do think that maybe it's also going to start with Bradley Beal being a little bit more assertive, because you saw it in the final few weeks of the season. He did get more assertive, didn't he? And it made a difference for this basketball team, both offensively and defensively. I don't think Beal's been bad. I just don't think he's been as assertive and aggressive as he needs to be in order for this team to be as good as they can be.
John, is this just a bad matchup for the Suns? doesn't mean that they can't come back and win. Is it just, you know, Minnesota's got so much size and they've got a very young, aggressive, we don't give a bleep who you are, what you've done, what Hall of Fame you're going into. We just flat don't care. Is this just a tougher matchup for them than maybe someone else that they would have faced in the West?
I think it's a tough matchup based on how good Minnesota is defensively, but I don't think it's a tougher matchup necessarily. I still think the Suns can take advantage of some of these matchups. Now, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards played their butts off at home.
Yep.
Anthony Edwards is, you know, on the borderline of becoming a star in the league. Some people already consider him a star in this league. I know he's got a star nickname in Ant-Man and certainly brought it like a star through portions of games one and two. But if you watch the three games in the regular season, Bradley Beal and the Suns did a really good job against Ant-Man. Now, can they do that here in Phoenix? I think they have a better chance than they did there. And all it took there for him was to make a couple crazy follow-away mid-range shots. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the switch flipped and he put that Ant-Man costume on and turned into the superhero. I don't see that happening here. And I don't see that happening with Jaden McDaniels either. He doesn't have the cute superhero nickname, but he's got great game. And he did in games one and two. It is an old adage that the role players and the young players play better at home. There's a reason it's an old adage. It actually does normally compute that way. We'll see. If Jaden McDaniels brings that kind of game to Phoenix, then call me an idiot. I will take it. I will eat that crow, and I will come back on the show and say, you know what? I was wrong, Brad. I just don't expect him to have 25 and all the other things he did, shutting guys down defensively. He was playing with so much confidence. That happens when you've got 19,000 crazy Minnesotans in white yelling at the top of their lungs for you. And it was a great environment for the Timberwolves. Now what needs to happen? It needs to be a great environment for the Phoenix Suns. And why wouldn't it be? I get it. We're down right now. It's 2-0 and you wanted to be up 2-0 or at least 1-1. You're not. But this is your chance, if you're a Suns fan, to go support this particular version of the Phoenix Suns. And I get that we're all wishing that maybe they had a little bit more success during the regular season, had a better seed, and maybe they had a better start to this series. That's natural to feel that way. But what I don't get is the people who are just, you know, closing up shop. They're basically already saying, I'm not even going to watch the game. Yeah. This is ridiculous. Yeah. This team has let me down. Has this team really, truly let you down? Think through that for a minute and then remind yourself 10 years ago about how you felt about the basketball team that you were following. If you were following them 10 years ago, I get it. If you just came on board in 2021 and you made it all the way to the finals and it was great, I get that. Now you're disappointed. But life isn't like that. You're not always going to have that kind of run. That was a very special team that put together a very special run and carried it into the following season and put 64 wins on the board and gave us such an amazing run and excitement during a regular season. Obviously, then what happened in the postseason, we still have bruises and scars. But that's what being a fan is all about. So that's why I'm kind of bringing us to the current day here, Brad. This is my old role as the therapist after games. Let's think about where we're at right now. We're down 2-0. We're hosting games 3 and 4. This is the way the series is built to go. That's why they have 7 games in a series. And it goes 2-2, 1-1-1. Let's see what happens in these next two.
All right, I'll get you out of here off this. And then you can take a blood pressure medication. Or
I need it. I haven't had it yet today. Whatever, and it's showing, isn't it?
Don't spit into the camera on this. I love your enthusiasm and energy as always. John Bloom with us. What does Frank Vogel do different? What are fans taking this in right now saying, okay, I'm right there with you, John. What is it that the coach and staff have to do different in game 3? Because you can't just say, well, it's the 5 guys on the floor. Stuff that they're going to work on today, stuff that they worked on yesterday on the plane ride home. What do you expect differently? Because this is a series of adjustments. That's the old playoff adage.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it starts with, do you have Grayson Allen? And we were wondering about that going into game 2 because he rolled his ankle in game 1. So he was a question mark going into game 2. This is a big part of this Phoenix Suns basketball team. I know it's not part of the big 3, but can we talk about Grayson Allen and how important he's been all season, not just leading the league shooting threes, but he has had to take on the toughest defensive assignment on the wing almost every game. Bradley Beal's kind of taken that over during stretches, but Grayson Allen has played excellent, I think, on both sides. And I want to give him a ton of credit. He's earned that payday he just signed and then some. I think, you know, from what you hear, he took less than he probably could have gotten if he waited it out and went on the open market and looked around and got wined and dined, which I'm sure would have been fun for him too. But he's happy being here in Phoenix, and I think the Suns need him. If he's not ready to go and that ankle is you know, not healthy or even somewhat suspect, then I think that there are going to be more adjustments. So Royce O'Neal obviously has slid into the starting lineup. That means when you go to the bench, it's Eric Gordon and then Drew Eubanks, and then what are you doing after that? And I think that's what they're talking about in their meetings right now. What I would tell you is I just, you know, feel like, you know, we're not going to see too much different from a stylistic standpoint. I mean, we watched an entire season, right? So I think we've gotten accustomed to what Frank Vogel and his staff are doing style-wise with this basketball team. I don't know how much they're going to be able to change midway through a first-round series against the top defensive team in the league. But what it's going to take from my standpoint is intensity and execution. If you come with the proper intensity with these guys that you have on your team, then you should be in position to win this basketball game at home, because you're going to be bolstered by the intensity inside that arena from that crowded Footprint Center. Then execution. Enough with these ridiculous cross-court passes. Brad Sesmat, what age were you taught not to throw that cross-court pass?
No. Unless you're Luka, nobody else should do it. And even Luka screws up, right? So, No, but I think the execution, like, I look at Josh a year ago was in the rotation. Josh has not done much. Josh has been hurt. I always look at it as there's the unexpected player that shows up in postseason. There is. And that unexpected player may get you 8 points, 3 assists, and a steal. That's much more than what they're getting out of their bench. So I look top to bottom and say, guys, you can't just say, well, we have these players here, they're not going to play in this series. You're down 0-2. And if Grayson doesn't play, then you do have to have some serious conversation about how deep into the bench do we go. That's just me. I'm looking at the spark plug of somebody, anybody off the bench, John.
Well, and think of how big that could be, because if you get somebody to come in game three and provide that spark could last. That spark could turn into after a spark, a little smolder, could it turn into something else to where that guy, if it's a Josh Okogie or whoever it happens to be, could then be a factor coming up in games 4, 5, 6, and even in if you can make it to another series. So, yeah, I like what you're saying there. It's tough. I'm not being in those rooms where they're having those conversations about who they have the trust in. And that's the word that comes to mind for me. It's not just who the coaches trust. It's who Book, Beal, and Durant trust to be out there when it matters.
Yeah. No, I think there's just a lot that we could see tomorrow night of why is this person being inserted at this point in the first quarter when they haven't played yet in this series or they played very minimally. That's just kind of how I look at it with the Allen thing, because there is a trickle-down effect. Look, I appreciate your time and chopping it up. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Brad, and keep up the great work, and I hope we get to hang in person soon, man.
Good seeing you. There is the great John Bloom. And you can hear his broadcast. You can turn down the audio. There is Hubie Brown that I have to contend with, and John would understand that at 90 years of age. But he has the broadcast with Tim Kempton. We're back with more after this timeout.